everyone. Today we're speaking to Rick Whitehead, the president and CEO of Richard Whitehead and Associates. He has 33 plus years in law enforcement. He's a retired commander from a large municipal agency, and now he trains and consults internationally. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for making the time to speak with all of us today.
Sure, glad to.
Statement analysis has become an important topic of conversation for us in season two. And so speaking with someone who understands and practices statement analysis professionally is a rare and valuable opportunity. And I was hoping to get some real concrete answers from someone with your expertise.
I'll help you any way I can.
Excellent, excellent. So I was hoping I could start off by asking you purely and simply, what is statement analysis?
Statement analysis is the analysis of words that a writer or a suspect or witness or anybody uses in an investigation, whether it's their verbal conversation or reduced to a written statement. Statement analysis is analyzing those words for deception.
I see. For deception. So how is this generally used and by whom?
It's used by law enforcement, arson investigators, private eyes, FBI agents. Anybody that's doing an investigation can use it.
I see. How did you come to find statement analysis and make it your profession?
In 1999, while I was still full-time employed as a law enforcement commander, I had the opportunity to attend the FBI National Academy, which is a version of the FBI Academy that's allocated to less than 1% of the law enforcement community outside the FBI. I had an opportunity to attend that three-month academy and learned it there. While I was there, I already had a training and consulting firm that I had developed that I'd worked part-time. By the end of the academy, I was so impressed by statement analysis, I asked my instructors if I could take it and teach it, and they said yes. I then went back to my agency and used it for several years in major crimes investigations to hone my skills, and then after that, developed the curriculum and began teaching it, as well as consulting in it.
Amazing. So you felt particularly drawn to statement analysis from the beginning. Did you find it to, why is that? Did you find it to be a very effective form of deception detection?
I did. When I was learning the techniques, there was about halfway through the class, there was just a corny sense of, wow, this is magic. Mm-hmm. Because I read these statements and read lots of statements over the course of my career. And you realize when you're communicating with somebody that something in their story is just not right. You just can't put your finger on it. But with statement analysis, it teaches you exactly where that something that's not right is and how to drill down into it. And it's just, once you learn the techniques, it just jumps out at you.
Well, to that point, do you find yourself doing it in your daily life all the time when people are speaking to you?
When I watch news episodes and interviews, interacting with people, my wife's been around me so much talking this and doing it. She does it. When I get a consulting case, she's right there alongside me because she's very in tune to it.
Wow. I guess when you practice it that much, it's difficult to turn off. You guys are essentially human lie detectors.
Something like that.
Something I think we're all wondering when learning about statement analysis is, how effective is it?
Science has shown that it can be more effective than a polygraph. It works in much the same way. Believe it or not, our bodies, fearfully and wonderfully made, are made not to be deceitful. So much like a polygraph, when we are deceitful, our respiration changes, our heartbeat changes. In statement analysis, the same is true in the words we choose to use. If I'm going to be deceitful in talking to you, I will use different words, unconscious to myself, in telling you that lie versus if I was telling you the truth. I don't realize I'm changing the words, but your body does it. The part of the fight-flight part of your brain makes those changes because it's in conflict with itself because it knows you're lying. So it will make the changes that it can reckon with.
Is it in conflict with itself because it's our natural inclination to tell the truth?
Yes.
Okay. So we are making these like a myriad of small, minor alterations in our language when we're telling a lie that's in a way totally unconscious to ourselves.
Exactly. And let me give you an example.
Okay.
Say you're going to burn down your house for insurance money. Mm-hmm. As human beings, we have attachments to things, whether it's people or things, we have attachments to things, whether it's our cars, our spouses, our pets, our homes, we are attached to those. So when we harm those, our psyche has to break that attachment. So say you're going to burn down your house for arson, or you're going to burn down your house for insurance money. As I ask you about your house, what happened, you know, what happened today before the fire truck came? Well, I got up and I left my house. I went to breakfast with some friends. I came back to my house, changed clothes, and left the house to go play tennis. In the early part of your conversation, you referred to your house as my house. The last time you referred to your house before you left for the tennis and before it burnt down, you said the house. So your psyche broke the connection with your house because you knew you were going to do it harm. So it's no longer my house, it's the house.
Oh, wow. That is a great example. I love that. It makes so much sense when you break it down that way, but these nuances are so subtle that I can see how, you know, they just go completely over our heads 99.9% of the time.
And I can tell you over the years of doing it, I feel like I get better with time. I look back at some old cases and I miss so many things because just doing it and living in it every day just hones the skill and makes it better.
Oh, well, that actually speaks to another question I was going to ask you, which is how long does it take someone to learn statement analysis?
I can teach somebody in 8 hours. After that, it's just practice.
I see. But people do, as you just stated, they get better with practice and it becomes much more efficient, would you say?
Yes. The more you scrutinize and pay attention, and it's actually a conscious effort to apply the skills at first to start slowing things down and breaking down the conversations, the interviews you see on TV, especially with politicians. That's the greatest example to look at, to examine.
Quite a lot of politician statements for you to analyze these days, I imagine. A lot going on.
Yeah. I can show, I have a class that I travel the country and present, or actually internationally and present, that's 8 hours long. I have a advanced class that's an additional 16 hours over and above that. But remotely, I have, and I think this is where you found me, was through law enforcement learning. I have the 8-hour class in an online forum where somebody can log in and take it at their own pace and learn and it's the 8-hour class, but they can do it at their own pace online.
Right. Do you find one way of learning more effective than another, remote versus in person?
Personally, I like the interaction face to face with people and doing the skills right then. I can see the advantages to being able to do it online at your own time, both financially, as far as travel and things like that to attend a class, and time constraints of, well, I can give it 2 hours today and 3 tomorrow, but I can't give you 8 hours all in one day. So there's pros and cons to both. I personally like the interaction with people and would much rather do it in a classroom environment than an online course.
Right. What are some common misconceptions about statement analysis that you're aware of?
The first misconception is when I mentioned statement analysis, people think that is handwriting analysis, which way I'm leaning my letters and the swirls and things like that. And it absolutely has nothing to do with the handwriting. It has to do with word usage.
Right. Yeah, I also would imagine another is that when I've tried Googling statement analysis, a lot of times I'll see financial statement analysis pop up, which is obviously something wholly different.
That's true. And I've had that come up too. I've talked to people about it and they saw the flyer for a class And that was their assumption, was it was about spreadsheets and analyzing financial statements. And that's not it at all.
Right. You know, I wonder why it isn't more well known. This seems to be a very effective form of lie detection. I mean, at least on par, if not exceeding that of the polygraph. So why do you think it isn't more well known?
I've widely wondered that myself. It does take time to adequately work a statement for an investigation. I consult in this now. So when I get emails, when I get statements emailed to me to consult on, I'll work them for a couple hours and then I'll walk away from it and just let it run around in my brain. And then I'll come back and I'll look at it again. And then I'll sleep on it. And then I'll work at it again. And then I'll sleep on it. And then I'll work it again. And each time you look at it, something else will pop out, because it's your frame of mind at the time when you're looking at it. And it's a time consuming process to do it right. And most law enforcement investigators, their caseloads are way too expensive or extensive. I'm sorry. They're way too extensive to be able to dedicate that kind of time. So it takes just that one special case that they're willing to invest the hours in to do that statement.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that you would take a statement and then work and rework and rework and actually spend time on the same statement. That's new information for me.
When I consult on a case and I'm actually physically involved in the interviews, I'll collect the statement and then I'll set up an interview, a follow-up interview a week later with that person. And that gives me a week to analyze and reanalyze the statement. And when you're doing your analysis, the questions that arise in that analysis, why did they say that? Why did they say it this way? Why did they say that here? All of those things produce questions for you to use during your interview. So if you can do this before an interview, collect the statement and analyze it, and then have the face-to-face interview, it makes that interview a lot more impactful, because you already know exactly where in their story you want to drill down if they've been deceptive, because the analysis has given you the questions you want to ask.
I see. So you do use statements and analysis of statements to sort of create an investigation blueprint or to identify areas that you want to explore further with a suspect.
Exactly. In my first interview, I won't ask them any questions. I'll just give them the legal pad and pen and give them the question that I want them to answer. And it's usually, tell me everything that happened between the time you woke up until the fire truck came, from the time you woke up until the detective came or the police officer came, whatever, from the time you woke up until after the whatever the event is that's in question. And then I'll say, okay, when can we meet again? And I'll set up a follow-up interview a week or so later. Then from there, I can analyze the statement, work up my questions, and be ready for that face-to-face interview where we're going to talk about it. But now I'll be more armed with information.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important to ask open-ended questions that way?
Statement analysis is all about, it's a two-step technique. My first job is to determine your norm and how you're going to communicate with me. What is your norm? Then I look for the deviation of the norm. So by asking for information ahead of the event, there's no reason for you to be deceptive telling me what happened from the time you got up until lunch, if the event happened at lunch. But once we get to lunch, then I already have your norm. It makes it easier to find that deviation of the norm during the event that's in question. If I ask you just about the event in question, I can still establish your norm, but it makes it harder. And I'm a KISS principle kind of guy. I want to make this process as easy as I can. So if I get you to talk about something that's not deceptive, there's no reason for you to be deceptive. I can determine the norm on how you're going to communicate. Then when I get to the timeline of the event in question, it makes it easier to find the change.
What is the KISS principle?
Keep it simple, Simon.
Oh, got it. So do you think that statement analysis should be admitted into courts of law? Meaning, is there a role, do you feel, for statement analysis in our criminal justice system?
I do. if the person that is presenting it has an adequate history and experience with it and can be qualified as an expert witness. Just because you learn it doesn't make you an expert at it. It's, you know, years of applying the techniques and working your way through it and establishing your credibility in it. But I think being established as an expert witness is not unfeasible at all.
Well, speaking of that establishment of expertise, are you aware, are there any nationally or state recognized certifications or licenses for this kind of thing? I'm just wondering how regulated it is.
It is not regulated. However, my course is nationally certified through an accreditation agency for all the different states as far as their law enforcement. Every state has their own law enforcement board or governing body. Mm-hmm. The national accreditation that my class has meets the standards for all those governing bodies.
I see. Would you like to see more regulation in the field of statement analysis?
I'm a less government versus more government kind of guy.
Right. So you think it's working the way it is?
I do.
Yeah. But you would like to see it introduced more into courts of law, providing the expert witnesses have experience that you would deem appropriate.
Yes. If a prosecutor could adequately present a person such as myself with their background and expertise to make them an expert witness, I think it's explainable, and then let the jury decide the validity.
Do you think that statement analysis is used more often by law enforcement than defense teams?
Initially, yes. But in the last few years, I've seen more defense side of the house starting to explore using it.
That makes sense. I imagine as more people hear about and get to know statement analysis, we'll start seeing it more and more.
I would hope so.
Right. Just out of curiosity, one, because I'll share this with you, when researching statement analysis, one of the most interesting, and a part of me even wants to say the most romantic components of statement analysis I've come across, is that of the liar's number. It just sounds very mysterious and very intriguing.
The liar's number is in number 3?
Yeah. Do you find that that's typically, that the principle holds true, that people will choose the number 3 before another number when they're trying to make a deceptive statement?
I do.
Wow. So you've actually seen that in practice?
I have.
Wow.
And I have a counterpart in my firm that teaches investigative interviewing skills. And in his class, he talks about the number 3 and other physical cues that the body gives in their when they're deceptive. So he does the body side and I do the word side.
I see. Do you find then that nonverbal cues are a good way of telling whether or not someone is being deceptive?
The nonverbal cues are an excellent way to tell when somebody is uncomfortable. Just because they're uncomfortable with a question doesn't mean they're deceptive. It just means you need to explore why they're uncomfortable.
I see. But statement analysis is good for targeting and identifying points in which people might be deviating from the truth.
Yes.
Are there any other interesting components of statement analysis you'd like to share?
Well, statement analysis uses verbs, pronouns, nouns, and time. If I was going to tell you a story and use time, you know, this happened at 10 o'clock, this happened at 10:30, this happened at 1, this happened at 1:30. Well, the norm I established was talking in 30-minute increments, but then I broke that and, you know, put in a couple-hour gap. Why did I put in a couple-hour gap? Everything they put on paper is analyzable, if that's a word. Mm-hmm. And everything you analyze for what was the norm, and do they break the norm? So if you're going to use time, I'm going to analyze it to how you're going to speak in reference to time and how you're going to use your nouns and pronouns. My favorite part of statement analysis is the pronouns.
Really?
Like a while ago when I was telling the story about my, the, Mm-hmm. You changed your pronoun. So that is the first area I look at when I get a statement, is I examine the pronouns to see if they flow right. And the order of importance in pronouns. If I say, my wife and I are going to lunch, who's more important in that statement?
Your wife?
My wife, because I put her first. If I say, me and my wife are going to lunch, I put me first.
Oh.
So, besides being grammatically incorrect, I'm putting me ahead of my wife. So when I'm telling a story or writing a statement, if I say my wife and I did this, and then the next time I refer to her, I say my wife did this, my wife did that, my wife did that, why am I not saying who my wife is? Why am I not using her name? Or because the simplest way, as human beings, we are inherently lazy. So once we make the introduction of my wife and I, the shortest way to refer to her after that is either by name or her, you know, using the pronoun instead of the noun. And so if I keep telling the story saying my wife and I, my wife and I, my wife and I, why am I not saying her name? Why am I saying it the hard way versus the easy way?
Right. Might an explanation for that be that you're feeling some kind of antipathy for your wife or distance from your wife? Is that what that would speak to?
Yes. And I would want to explore why are you not using we? Why are you not using her name? It's not necessarily deceptive, but it gives me an area to investigate further. That's that part of the prepping for the interview. I know where to drill in because of the language that they used.
Right. So you, in that case, you would hear that statement and just identify there's something going on with his feelings for his wife. Like something's a little bit off or a little unexpected there.
Right. And, or if they're telling the story, my wife and I, my wife and I, my wife and I, and then part of the investigation is she's now deceased. Well, that's a huge indicator that there's something wrong. And that makes you a prime suspect because they're now deceased and you didn't use the proper language when discussing her.
Right. God, that's so interesting. There's so much to dig into and talk about because, you know, the human language is so varied and so nuanced and so broad. So I imagine, you know, the number of conversations and examples could be endless.
And on that part, it doesn't make any difference the education level. It doesn't make any difference where you grew up. It doesn't make any difference what language you speak. Everybody in communicating has a norm. The trick is to determine their norm and then look for the deviation. So it doesn't make any difference whether I have a first grade education or I'm a PhD. I have a norm in how I'm going to communicate. The deception is when I deviate from my norm.
I see. So even if someone has a very poor grasp of, say, grammar, that wouldn't necessarily throw you off. Once you understand the way that person typically speaks, you can just use that as a jumping off point or a baseline.
Correct. They've established their norm as being horrible in grammar. Mm-hmm. But I can still analyze for when they break that.
Right.
That is the linguistic cues that we look for, is when they break their norm.
What is your hope for the future of statement analysis? Where would you like to see it go?
I would like to see more agencies, law enforcement agencies, any investigator use the techniques more. I think they don't realize the value that the statement analysis gives their interview when they have their interview. They're too quick to go straight to the interview, and then they're working from the seat of their pants. Mm. Or they videotape that interview, and then after the interview, they go back and look at it and then do some analyzing and have to play catch up. But governments as they are, and agencies being constricted into caseloads versus time management, most agencies don't allow enough time for an investigator to do the in-depth investigation that it might be warranted. They have to cherry pick what they're going to do it on.
I see. That makes sense. because from in terms of resources, it sounds like you're of the mind that statement analysis is an underused resource for investigators.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense to me. And since it doesn't take that long to actually learn, you're saying that, you know, one of the things that they're lacking in considering its application is the time that it requires.
Correct. And the way I teach the class and the way I teach the techniques is, although the more you use it, the better you're going to get at it, I give my attendees the tools to where if you took the class today and for whatever reason didn't use it for a year from now, hey, I went to that class, I want to try that. You could pull back out the tools I give you and it will walk you through it step by step through the different techniques to be able to do the analysis. It's going to be slower and it's going to be clunkier, but it's not a use it or lose it tool. You just get better at it the more you use it.
For anyone listening who isn't in law enforcement, do you think there is value for laymen to understand the science?
Yes, a lot of corporations use it in negotiations. They'll have somebody that's an expert in the room during contract negotiations to listen to those verbal cues where there's implying one thing but meaning another. Mm-hmm. So it is in corporate settings, any type of civil action setting would be besides criminal, or just somebody that wants to be better at detecting deception in conversations they have day to day.
Right. I actually imagine that would apply to a lot of people.
I heard somebody else say this, but, and in thinking about it, it's true. You have to be complicit to be lied to. And for a lot of people, being complicit is just not knowing. You know something's wrong, but you don't know why it's wrong. In statement analysis, it's easier to figure out what's wrong with that statement. And then if you don't push back on it or question it, you're being complicit and being lied to.
Wow. That's a really interesting point.
Well, think about the daily conversations you have with either friends, spouses, children, especially. They'll tell you something that you know is not quite up to par, but you're not willing to push back against it.
Right.
And most of us, I mean, people tell white lies all day long, and we just take that as a matter of the day. But when it comes to that important question and somebody gives you something that's in question, now you know.
Right. So for those that do want to learn how to conduct statement analysis, how can they do that?
To find someone like myself that does training, there is not, that I know of, there is not a lot of folks out there that allow civilians into their class. They keep it constrained to just investigators, whether they're private or law enforcement or arson investigators. Whereas my online course, anybody can attend. So finding somebody like me through my online course is attached through my website. I'm not sure how you found it or found me, but I'm guessing just searching it, you got to law enforcement learning and found me. Mm-hmm. So you can take it online that way, or find someone that's putting on a class that will allow you into that class. A lot of agencies I teach for, the law enforcement agencies, a lot of times will not allow civilians in the classroom. So the instructor has to work out those details as to whether the agency is going to constrict the class or not.
I see. Well, how can people find your organization if they want to learn from you, or if they want to take your online courses?
The easiest way to find me is through my website, and it's rickwhitehead.com. Real simple, but back to that KISS principle I talked about. rickwhitehead.com. My online class is linked on the center bottom of the homepage of my website, where they can go straight to the online class, or they can check my training calendar to find where I'm conducting a training and then reach out to me to see whether they can get access to it or not.
Perfect. That sounds great. I hope a lot of people take the time to explore your website, because you have a prestigious organization. And as stated, I think statement analysis is a really, really interesting and potentially extremely valuable resource that is currently being underapplied. So let's get that.
I agree.
In 2 days, it gets ugly in Keith Montgomery's trial. Crass text messages from the night he saw Riley Page are revealed, begging the question, meaningless boasts or intent? See you in 2 days.